The new San Francisco Ultramax Super Security Prison is housed on the island of Alcatraz. It was literally built on top of the old prison. When it was decided that the province of New Cali needed a new high-tech prison, Alcatraz seemed to be the perfect spot. After all, it was secluded and already housed a prison. Problem was, some psychologist somewhere decided that the old building was so ugly that prisoners couldn't feel good about themselves unless they could feel good about their prison. Therefore, it was decided to upgrade the old prison. After spending millions of credits on pre-prep plans and pre-plans, it was determined that it was technically impossible to improve the old prison without spending more than it would cost to build a brand new prison. After a few years of debate between the World Council and Province Council, it was decided that yes, they would build a new prison on top of the old. Everybody was happy with this, except for the historians who claimed that the old prison was a classic modern relic that shed insight on a rough time in human history, and we couldn't destroy it without hurting ourselves. This sparked more debate, focus groups, and consulting firms. Finally, after years of study and billions of credits, the new facility was built on top of the old one and suspended in midair by hover discs. When all was said and done, the government managed to build a 500 million credit facility for roughly 10 billion credits. Probably the strangest result of all this politicking was that the facility was actually quite secure. You can only get to the island by boat. Once on the island, you can only get to the prison by taking a special elevator. The entire place was a no-teleport zone, which I had no problems with. Carol met me at the boat dock for the ferry to Alcatraz. It was early evening, and the ferry was crowded with security personnel from the night shift getting ready to go on duty. They were all dressed in white body armor from head to foot, giving them the appearance they were all cloned from the same well-built guy, even the ladies. So far, between Carol's psi powers, Harv's holograms, and my sheer dumb luck, nobody had questioned that I was Police Captain Tony Rickey. I was hoping we'd be able to take advantage of the shift change and sneak in without too much hassle. The ferry docked, and I followed the security personnel onto an automated ramp that led through a body scanner.
Harv? Are you sure we'll get through the body scanner okay?
Of course. I've interacted with its software to offset the physical differences between you and Captain Rickey.
What about the Colt?
Do you mean your weapon or a young horse?
My weapon.
I assumed that, but I wanted to be sure. No problems, it's scanner cloaked.
Are you sure?
We'll be in about 12 seconds.
I held my breath as I scrolled through the tunnel-like body scanner. After I completed the pass, two of the guards pulled me to the side.
Sorry, Captain Rickey, we need to frisk you.
Frisk me.
Standard procedure for non-scheduled visitors.
I stepped off the ramp. One of the guards pointed to a table.
Arms out and spread them.
I placed my arms on the table. The second guard started patting me down, bottom to top. When he reached my midsection, he worked his way up my arm and stopped.
What's up the arm?
My only choice was to show them the Colt 2062 and hope to talk my way out of it. The Colt popped into my hand. I showed it to the guards without looking at it.
Sweet.
The others smiled and nodded. I looked at the Colt. It looked like a good old-fashioned billy club.
Hollow cover.
It's in case the subject doesn't fully cooperate.
Well, officially, we have to frown on that.
Cause unofficially.
They winked at me. It was a bit off-putting, but I played along. I pointed to Carol.
That's why I brought my own Psy along. I plan to get the information any way I can.
One of the guys pointed to the elevator door.
Pass.
I moved into the elevator with Carol close behind me, along with five security personnel. A text message popped into my mind. I'm not talking because it's taking all of my focus to keep these guards from asking too many questions. They're wearing Psy scramblers. I can't control them, but at least I can keep them from thinking very hard.
That was from Carol.
I know.
What do you know, Captain?
I know I won't have any problem getting a room to interrogate the prisoner.
No, of course not.
The guard touched a button on his helmet.
Move Cannon to room 1A. They're moving her now.
Thanks.
Hey, no problem.
When the elevator doors opened, I followed the guards out. The place was cold and sterile, yet not in a gloomy way. It was like some architect decided that mixing a mental hospital with a daycare center would yield the perfect jail. In a way, the look worked. A couple of guards came up to me and saluted.
We are here to escort you to the prisoner.
Lead the way.
I followed the guards through the entryway and down a long cement corridor. They led me to a high-tech-looking door with a slot in it. I looked through the slot. Shannon was sitting at a table, her hands and feet wrapped in muscle inhibitor bands. She was also wearing a helmet covered in circuitry. My guess was that it was the latest in psi-stopping hardware.
We're out here if you need us.
I entered the room. I looked up. There were cameras all around. This was going to be tricky. Shannon's eyes narrowed when she saw me.
I already told you all I know, Copper.
I pointed at her.
Sit down and shut up!
I already am sitting.
Good. Then just shut up.
Shannon shot Carol an angry glance.
Why do you have the mind bitch with you?
None of your business.
Carol, tell her who I am.
She called me a bitch.
Carol, focus, please.
Fine.
Carol locked eyes with Shannon.
She says if she had her powers, we'd both be in trouble. She thinks it's a trick.
I need you to talk. No tricks.
I sat across from her.
Tell her not to worry. I'm not an ogre with a Vulcan nerve pinch.
What?
Just think it, Carol.
I knew that Shannon would have been too ashamed of that incident to ever admit it to anybody else.
She believes you.
Are you still claiming to be innocent?
I am innocent.
She's thinking the same thing.
Her heart rate and brain scan patterns say she's not lying, which, if she wasn't a psi, would be telling. But in her case, she may just be a perfect liar.
I don't believe you.
I want to believe you.
Carol relayed the message.
Doss, it's hard blasting through her inhibitor.
Is there anything else you can tell me?
I've been thinking long and hard about what happened. I think I've seen the tall, blue-skinned woman who attacked them before with Sputnik's people.
Sure you have. Oh, tweet!
I turned, and there stood the real Captain Ricky, along with 20 guards. The hologram cloaking me faded away.
Zack, what am I gonna do with you?
Tony and his men walked us out of the room. Tony was silent as they were escorting us out of the prison. Occasionally, he'd look my way and just shake his head. It was one of the longer walks of my life. We were on the barge back to the mainland when Tony spoke. He focused his attention on Carol.
I expect this from Zack, but not you.
Just doing my job.
Harv appeared next to us looking like a lawyer, dressed in a formal suit and holding an old leather briefcase.
Actually, Officer Ricky, Carol did nothing wrong. There are no laws preventing somebody from causing somebody to think one person is somebody else, even an officer of the law.
Well, what Zack did had to be illegal.
If you review all recordings, Zack never claimed he was you. He can't help what other people assume.
Even if I was buying this, Zack still didn't have to play along.
Zack didn't have any control. I was trying to get him in trouble, so I forced him to wear that hologram.
Why would you do that?
I was just testing Zack to see how he'd react. So I'm the guilty one. Take me away.
I have to admit, they are loyal.
That's because they know I'm right.
Even if he wasn't right, he has the law on his side.
That still gives you no right to impersonate a police officer.
I was testing the system.
That's your defense, Zack.
And now? I took some time to figure out how I wanted to run with this. Tony's one of my oldest friends, but I wasn't about to go to jail over this, especially when I knew I was right. What will the media say when they learn that a simple PI easily got into a high-security prison? Besides, she's innocent.
What makes you think she's innocent? The fact that she's a hot blonde with big breasts?
Well, that doesn't hurt. But I don't get the guilty vibe from her.
The guilty vibe?
Zack thinks he's gifted with a special PI sense, like Spider-Man.
It's true.
I know, but Zack thinks she's innocent won't hold up in court. DMV, many judges would give her the chair based on that alone.
I've always wondered what DMV stands for and why it's used as a curse word.
You could research it.
I don't wonder that hard.
Guys, can we please get back to the case?
Oh, that's right. I'm thinking about arresting you.
Not that part of the case. Let's talk about Shannon being innocent. You heard her say she thinks the killer was a mooner.
Of course she says that. Our profilers have concluded that she was seeing her own image as a way to justify the crime she was committing.
And you think I'm the one who's wacko?
Listen, Zack, I'm getting a lot of heat on this one. My bosses want this case wrapped up. Unless you can give me something legit to go on, I'm considering it wrapped up.
Excuse me, I have an incoming call from Dr. Poole.
Not now, Harv. I'm busy trying to avoid being arrested by my best friend.
Zack, friends don't use holograms to impersonate friends and break into high-security prisons.
You should write that on a holocard.
That does it.
I think you better both shut up and listen.
Harv's image morphed into that of Randy in his lab.
Hi, Zack. Hi, Tony. How come I never get to go on the cool boat trips?
Randy, I'm about to be arrested here.
Now, what was I going to say?
You tested the video from the council chambers.
Ah, the video. I ran it through many, many, many more filters.
And?
Oh, yes. I've concluded a body did appear in the room right before the cameras went dead. The body was cloaked and out of phase, but I did some magnetic shifting to get a rough image.
Randy's image morphed to the setting of the council chambers. It was filled with busy workers moving to and fro. There was a crack of energy in the middle of the room. That energy took the form of a tall, shapely woman. Then, everything went black.
See?
How do we know that wasn't canon?
I have video of her in the bathroom at the time. They have cameras everywhere in that building.
How do we know it wasn't a hologram?
She left a deposit in the bathroom's, human waste disposal device.
And you know this how?
They save everything in that building. I did an analysis on her, well, deposits, and it was hers. Shannon Cannon was definitely in the bathroom when the attack started.
How come your people don't have the straight poop, Tony?
When a case looks like such a slam dunk, we don't poke around toilets, Zach.
Come on, Tony. Even you have to see there's another possible suspect here. Tony just stood there. Superpowered, female, and tall? Sounds like it could be a mooner.
Sounds like it could be Elena.
Damn. Das. Damn, this is not going to be easy. It's going to take me at least 24 hours to get clearance just to consider being allowed to talk to them.
So I'm free to go? Tony just glared at me. I had made his job much harder. But we both knew I'd done the right thing. Now it was his turn.
You're under house arrest for at least 48 hours.
He turned to Carol.
It's your job to watch him. Make sure he stays clean.
I have a date tonight.
Not if you're in jail.
Okay, so now I had both Tony and Carol angry with me, but I was free from jail. It was also the first break on the case. I had to consider that a good thing. After Carol broke her date, she and I drove to my house in my car. Her car followed us home on autopilot. I was glad Tony had let me off the hook, at least for now. I was also happy that there was now a good chance that Shannon Cannon was innocent. I don't know why I cared, but I did. I was even happier that Carol had forgiven me for breaking up her date. Turned out she wasn't that thrilled with the guy to begin with. He had begged her to go out with him. It was only the first date, and the poor sucker had no idea she was a psi. She was sure that once he found out, he'd go from being infatuated with her to being terrified of her. Melt one ex-boyfriend's car, and it kinda sticks with you for a while. With Electra on the moon, Carol and I planned a nice quiet evening of takeout Chinese and watching old credit-for-view movies in 2D, the way they were meant to be viewed. We watched The Princess Bride. I had to explain some of the humor to Carol, but all in all, I think she enjoyed it. We watched, ate, and talked into the evening. It was nice to be able to just hang out without having to worry about work or saving the world. Midnight came and we both hit the sack. All might not have been perfect with the world, but I had opened up the police's eyes to Shannon being innocent. Plus, nobody was trying to kill me, so I was content. The peace and tranquility that had become my life lasted until 3 a.m.
Dio, wake up!
Carol shook me from bed.
Huh. What is it? Somebody breaking in?
No, of course not. I could handle that.
In that case, what are you doing in my bedroom at
3:02 and 54 seconds a.m.?
At 3:02 a.m.
It's now 3:03.
Carol pulled me out of bed, not seeming to mind or notice that I was only in my boxers.
We have to go now, before they get away.
She pointed to my closet, and a shirt and pair of pants floated out. Carol, what are you talking about?
The assembly from the moon is leaving.
They can't leave. Tony's getting a search warrant.
They are leaving before it's issued.
They can do that?
They have interplanetary immunity. They can come and go as they please.
How are we supposed to stop them then? Carol handed me my shirt.
We're not going to stop them. We're going to follow them.
To the moon?
Think of it as a way to visit Electra.
How do you know everything isn't kosher?
Some mooner psi named Elena. She's so powerful, her mental SOS is ripping through my defenses like a laser through butter. We have to get to the shuttle port and get on that flight to the moon.
That won't be easy. Due to the conference and the incident, the moon is closed to all outsiders.
We'll worry about those details when we get there.
She's been hanging around you too long.
Huh. Give me 3 minutes to change.
I'll give you two.
I got dressed, and Carol and I headed over to the shuttle port. As we drove through the night, we made our plans on how to get on the shuttle. My cover was that I missed my girlfriend Electra and wanted to see her. Carol's was that she had an urge to visit and interact with the psis on the moon. We figured they probably wouldn't be too keen with a couple of last-minute Earthers tagging along. We had a plan of action for that, too. We complain and make a fuss. A really loud fuss. Chances were, the Moon delegation wanted to make a quiet and hasty retreat. They weren't going to hassle us that much. I surmised that they would rather let us on the flight than risk slowing down the flight. My logic being that their logic would be that once they had us on their turf, the Moon, they could control us better.
So that's the extent of your plan? To whine like girls until they let you on the shuttle?
Hey, I am a girl!
I'm pointing most of my criticism at Zack.
I'm betting anything it'll get us on that shuttle.
Yes, but what then? What happens when we get to the Moon?
The plan is still forming in my mind.
The sad thing is, this is actually one of your more elaborate plans.
The shuttleport, like most of the newer buildings, was a tall dome that sat on the outskirts of town where the airport used to be. The shuttleport also doubled as a central public teleporting area. It's kind of interesting how New Frisco is the only place on Earth that has a combined shuttle teleport port. And how, you ask, did New Frisco become a city of power in the world? Well, back in the old days, the early 2000s, Frisco was considered a nice artsy and trendy, i.e. expensive city. But it always took a backseat to other major cities when it came to actually getting work done. Then, after 2022, when the aliens first landed on Earth, Frisco became a booming center of not just art, but commerce and science and government. I'm not really sure why. After all, the aliens landed in Kansas. Yet somehow, after the aliens revealed themselves to us, Frisco boomed. Harv had a couple of theories about this, which shouldn't be surprising, as Harv has at least a couple of theories about everything. I guess when all you do is think all day, it leaves you a lot of time to come up with ideas. Harv's theory on Frisco is actually two-pronged. First, the aliens had a lot of scouts in Frisco posing as humans. Harv surmises that the aliens, intelligent beings as they are, tended to be drawn to the artistic nature of early Frisco. The other part of his theory dealt with the human aspect. The same qualities that attracted the aliens to Frisco were a lot of the same that attracted a large gay community to the area. Harv has concluded, and has some stats to back him up, that gay people get more things done than straight people. Harv attributes this to the fact that gay couples almost always have fewer children than straight couples, and therefore they are less tired and less distracted. As Harv puts it, conceiving children through sex is a lot more fun and less time-consuming than going through courtrooms and adopting. So heterosexual couples would naturally have more children in the short run, which in turn would tire them out more in the long run. Thus, it was only natural that Frisco would excel in this brave new world. I'm not sure I agree with Harv. I enjoy arguing with him, though. It keeps my brain fresh. I do have to admit, though, he may have a point. We got to the shuttleport, parked the car, and headed inside. The place was fairly empty. A quick glance around the desk area showed that for every Earther manning a position, there was a corresponding Mooner. There was an Earther and a Mooner at the check-in desk, and an Earther and a Mooner, and a really big guard bot guarding the door to the flight area. Harv informed me that we'd actually beaten Sputnik and his entourage to the check-in area. They'd just pulled into the parking garage and were at least 3 minutes behind us. I walked up to the ticket counter. The Earther employee waved to me. She was a small, older woman with her hair done in an old-fashioned bun. She looked out of place in a shuttleport to the Moon.
Good evening, sir. Welcome to the shuttleport, the fastest, most efficient, and only way to go to the Moon.
Nice motto.
Do you have a reservation?
I have a lot of reservations. Space travel seems so sci-fi-ish.
Shuttle trips to the Moon are perfectly safe.
I'd like 2 tickets for the 6 a.m. flight, please. She passed her hand over her control screen.
Very good, sir. I'll just need your and your traveling companion's DNA scans.
She held up a thumb scanner for me. I placed my thumb on it. A 3D image of myself appeared above the lady's control panel.
Ah, Zachary Nixon Johnson. It appears you have enough credits to purchase this trip.
The Mooner employee looked over at my image. She looked at me. She was a short, middle-aged, Asian-looking woman.
I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson. That flight is full.
The Mooner looked into her eyes. The Earthwoman's eyes glazed over.
Oops, my big boo-boo. That flight is full.
Carol leaned forward, looking directly at the Mooner.
You're going to have to do better than that.
My image floating above the screen morphed into Harv's. He pointed at the Mooner woman.
I'm Mr. Johnson's personal computer aide. I have analyzed your reservations. The shuttle holds 400 passengers, and you have only booked 99 spaces.
Harv's image morphed to a layout of the inside of the shuttle cabin. Each of the empty seats was glowing and flashing the word available. Harv leaned over as if he were reading the Moon Lady's name tag.
Now, Miss Osborne, that would mean that there are actually 301 seats available. Being a supercomputer, I'm quite good at math.
Have you done the e-paperwork needed to make the trip to the moon?
Earthers don't need paperwork to go to the moon, as you should know this.
Ah, yes, good point. I forgot the Earth to Moon Equality Act hasn't passed council yet.
Sputnik is watching.
Listen, I am a taxpaying citizen of Earth. Not only that, a couple of days ago I was a famous spokesperson. I demand to be let aboard this flight. Perhaps I should call my friends in the media. I'm sure World Right Now, Instant Buzz, and News 2Know would love to hear about this. Maybe I'll call my good buddy Captain Tony Ricky of the New Frisco Police Force. I'm sure he'd love to hear about this abuse of my citizen of Earth rights.
This caught Sputnik's attention. He whispered something into the ear of one of his traveling companions. Just then I realized his entourage was made up almost totally of females. Out of the 90 or so members of his party, only 4 of them were males. It was mostly a blue-haired, Asian-seeming harem. I noticed Melda was directly behind Sputnik, along with another woman who looked like a younger version of Melda. Sputnik moved forward. He was average height, but quite stocky. His hair was blonde with streaks of gray and blue, eyes a steely gray, but nothing very notable about his face except for his handlebar mustache and his goatee. He looked like a cross between a game show host, used hover salesman, and coffeehouse poet. He held out his hand to me.
Why, Mr. Johnson, how nice to finally meet.
He is so lame.
The pleasure is all mine.
Gee, Zack, you could at least try to lie better.
Sputnik released my hand. I fought back the urge to wipe my hand on the side of my pants.
So, Mr. Johnson.
Call me Zack.
So, Mr. Johnson, why do you wish to go to the moon?
I always wanted to go there. Never had the time. I figure now's a good time, with my girlfriend there for this conference. Sputnik looked at me for a moment. One of his companions whispered something into his ear. He smiled.
Ah, yes, the lovely Elektra Gavada. She is attending the ARC conference. I plan on addressing them tomorrow.
I'll give Elektra your regards, then.
Really, Mr. Johnson, wouldn't you prefer to visit our lovely moon at a much less busy time?
Nope. Melda moved forward, with a younger version of herself trailing just behind.
Mr. Johnson, how nice to meet you again.
Sputnik shot her a glance. It was a subtle look, but I caught it nonetheless. He didn't know that I'd had contact with Melda before. He wasn't happy. I just wasn't sure if he was upset about the meeting or the not knowing. Melda focused her attention on Sputnik.
Dear, Mr. Johnson and I met while I was working on a project with Dr. Poole. Zack and Dr. Poole are old friends. Zack saved us from a couple of plants. We didn't need saving, but it was a bold gesture anyhow.
Yeah, I'm in constant contact with Randy, as well as my good buddy, Captain Tony Ricky. Melda locked eyes with Sputnik. She was obviously sending him a mental message. Perhaps you'd like my computer to call them now. I'm sure they'd love to talk to you, Mr. Sputnik. I pushed a button on my wrist communicator, and Harv appeared before Sputnik and Melda.
I would gladly make the connections.
This is Mr. Johnson's personal holographic assistant. He's very advanced.
Yes, I am constantly on, and nearly impossible to override.
Sputnik broke his eye contact with Melda. He turned toward me, then walked past me and around Harv to stand directly in front of Ms. Osborne.
Give Mr. Johnson and his lovely traveling companion, Miss Gavada, a complimentary flight on my account.
Ms. Osborne lowered her eyes and looked at her control panel.
Of course.
So, you know Carol. Sputnik grinned slightly and touched Carol on the cheek.
Of course. We on the moon are very interested in psionic individuals. My people tell me she is in the top 2% of Earth's size. Very impressive.
Thanks. More like the top 1% of size.
More like the top 5% if you count the moon.
Sputnik turned and smiled. And this was a true smile, not a crocodilian political one. He held out his hand. A girl approached. She was slightly shorter than Melda, but no less stunning. You could tell the two were either related or commonly cloned.
Mr. Johnson, Miss Gavada, I'd like you to meet my daughter, Leia.
It was interesting. I was sure Melda had to be the mother, but Sputnik wasn't giving her any recognition.
Oh, typical human male. Takes credit for everything.
Leia moved past me as if I wasn't there. She was intent on making her point to Carol.
On the moon, we Psis are allowed, no, encouraged, to practice openly. It lets our powers flourish. You'll like it there.
My daughter is quite spirited and quite a promoter of our cause.
Leia took a step back, now focusing on me. She held her hand up to my face. I assumed she wanted me to kiss it, So I did.
You will like the moon also. Just don't stay too long or cause any problems.
She didn't even move her lips when she spoke to me. Her words passed right through my mental defenses, directly into my subconscious. Before they could sink their claws in, though, another voice rang through.
Don't listen to the little false princess. She's so conditioned by her father, she can't tell her ass from a donkey.
That voice was Elena's. I looked up through the crowd of mooners, and sure enough, Elena was bringing up the back of the line, just behind two gorillas carrying luggage. Don't fret. I'm sure I'll enjoy my stay. I gave a polite tip of my fedora to Sputnik and his ladies. With that, Carol and I headed toward security so we could board the shuttle. Security was going to be the next obstacle. After all, I was traveling with a weapon up my sleeve. Sure, it was a very hard-to-detect weapon. Plus, Harv assured me that security to the moon was extremely low. For some reason, EarthGov didn't feel the need to provide a lot of security. Still, I hadn't exactly made a lot of friends here, and I thought security, being mooners, would be tough on me. I walked up to the door leading to the concourse. A blue-clad security guard, a big box of a man, stepped out in front of me.
Are you traveling with any weapons?
He was flanked by a large guard bot on his left and another tall, older mooner lady on his right. Her blue hair almost blended in with her uniform. My first instinct was to lie. I fought back that urge. I popped the Colt into my hand. I'm carrying this. I have a license to carry a weapon.
Sweet.
The male guard waved his scanner up and down my body. He looked at the screen on the scanner.
According to this, yes, you are registered to carry a weapon, which means you may carry just one weapon on the moon. Also, according to this, you've been known to carry a knife and an old-fashioned firearm in ankle holsters.
I dressed in a hurry. No time to bring all my usual equipment. The guard bot extended a claw-like arm and started patting me down from my hips to my feet. Hey, careful around the midsection. After a significant pat-down, the guard bot retracted its hand.
He's clean.
I hope your claw was.
You may pass.
I walked by him. I turned and waited for Carol. The guard stepped in front of her.
Do you have any weapons to declare?
Please, I'm a powerful Psi. My mind is my weapon. I could tell you all to drop that at my feet and you would gladly do so.
Carol passed by the guard. We walked down the tunnel to the concourse together. Carol looked at me and winked.
I'll give you your backup gun and knife when we get to the moon.
The moon shuttle group was very efficient. They didn't keep us in the waiting area for more than 10 minutes before they boarded us on the shuttle. The shuttle itself reminded me of the old airplanes I used to ride as a kid, only a bit wider and the chairs seemed a lot more comfortable. The cabin was broken into two areas, a first-class zone in the front that held 50 people, and a regular-class zone that held the remaining 350 people, though the allotted area was no bigger than first-class. Where first-class had 25 rows of big comfy seats side by side, regular-class had 70 rows of little seats, two on one side of the aisle and three on the other. Carol and I were given the two seats farthest away from first-class. The only good things about them was that they were near the bathroom and that there was nobody sitting between us, so at least we could stretch out a little. It didn't take long for the rest of the passengers to settle into their seats. It took even less time for Carol, Harv, and I to deduce that Carol and I were the only two Earthers on this flight. Sputnik and his main entourage sat in the first-class section. The gorilla baggage carriers and the rest of the mooners, including Elena, were spread throughout the remaining section of the shuttle. You can almost see daggers shooting from Elena's eyes as she looked at Sputnik. Though her assigned seat was near the front of the cabin, she came back and sat near Carol and me. She didn't talk to us, but I had the distinct feeling that she wanted to.
Hello, everyone. The flight to the moon will take 5 hours. Now, we may encounter a little choppiness leaving the Earth's atmosphere, but after that, it is expected to be clear sailing the rest of the way to the moon. The hostess bots will be serving drinks and breakfast once we reach the ionosphere. Now, sit back and relax.
The shuttle was a strange beast. It took up off the ground vertically like a regular hovercraft. Unlike a hover, though, the shuttle rose until it reached 5 miles above the Earth. As we climbed, I looked down on New Frisco, watching it grow smaller and smaller. From this high up, the city, lit by the rising sun, looked blurred, kind of like a hastily made quilt. Once the shuttle reached optimal height, it stopped its complete vertical ascent.
Passengers, prepare for acceleration boost.
I held onto my seat, not sure why, but it seemed like the thing to do. Rocking forward, I felt the speed increasing faster and faster. I kind of liked the speed, kind of hated the shuddering. I glanced over at Carol, who was looking at me. She was loving this burst of acceleration. She touched me on the hand.
Don't worry, we'll be fine. Once we break out of the gravitational pull of the Earth, you won't even notice the speed.
I sat back and closed my eyes. Not much else to do, really.
Just relax your mind.
Don't be a baby.
Relax.
I opened my eyes and peeked over at Elena sitting across the aisle from Carol. She was sitting on her seat in the lotus position, like Sai's like to do. She seemed calm, like she didn't have a worry in the world. That worried me. After a few minutes, which seemed a lot longer, the ride became smooth. It was as if we were gliding on virgin ice. I looked out the window. I could see the Earth growing smaller and smaller. It made me feel small, but in a good way, like I was part of something bigger than I was. Space travel must bring up my poetic side.
We are now in space, and we are now traveling at an average speed of 60,000 kilometers an hour. We will be at the moon in less than 6 hours. We've also reached cruising speed. The serving pods will be around shortly to serve drinks and a delicious breakfast.
I sat back in my chair, at least as back as I was able. Considering we were in the last row and my chair didn't recline all that much, I decided to relax and enjoy the flight. Not much else I could do here on the shuttle.
Zach, close your eyes now.
Why?
Just do it, Zach.
Against my better judgment, I took Harv's advice.
Droop your head like you're sleeping.
I did.
Now drool a little.
I don't drool.
Should I play video proof in your mind?
I can pretend sleep without pretend drooling.
A true method actor would drool.
I thought about drooling for a nano and decided against it. Tough guys don't drool. I curled back in my seat.
Why am I feigning sleep?
Because Elena is sending out messages to everybody else on the shuttle to sleep.
Why is she doing that?
Who knows? She's the mind reader, not me. But by fake sleeping, we'll be able to discover why. Even with your eyes closed, I can still watch her through your wristcom and the shuttle's computer system. Then I can relay the images to your brain.
The images of everyone else on the plane scrolled through my brain. Sure enough, they were all sound asleep, except for Elena.
Why aren't I napping like the rest of them?
Elena is broadcasting on a very wide but unique mental frequency, so I am able to block her out for now. You have to be careful, though. If she focused her concentration on you, you'd be out colder than a flounder on ice.
How was Elena able to catch the other Sai's off guard?
My guess is that Sai's find space relaxing. Therefore, none of them feel threatened up here, and they all relaxed their defenses.
Harv, you're a computer. You're supposed to know, not guess.
I watched in my mind as Elena stood up. The blouse she was wearing had a long sleeve on one side and no sleeve on the other. Reaching up the long sleeve, she pulled out a sharp metal object. I made my move, having surprise on my side. I lunged across Carol, grabbing Elena's knife hand with my right hand. Moving my body forward, I pulled her arm back toward me, catching her totally off guard. I drove her to the ground, keeping my weight on top of her all the while and locking her right arm behind her back. Popping my Colt 2062 into my left hand, I forced the barrel behind her head.
I don't want to hurt you.
That's not going to be a problem.
Oh!
I went flying off of Elena, crashing into the back wall and crumbling to the ground.
What did I tell you about not letting her focus on you?
I needed to react fast. I started to push myself up. I felt a spiked boot on my back forcing me down. It felt like a metric ton holding me in place.
She's not just using the boot. She's also using her telekinetic powers.
Yeah. Thanks, Captain Obvious.
No need to get snotty just because some Sai is about to wipe the floor and ceiling with you.
The computer in your brain is correct and will no longer be able to help you.
I tried to look up, but I couldn't.
You may look at me.
I moved my head up. She was towering over me, holding my Colt 2062 in her hand. That was my chance.
Gus, shock her good.
Elena is blocking your mental link with Gus.
Gus, shock her!
Gotcha, and with pleasure!
This tipped Elena off. She quickly opened her hand, letting Gus drop to the ground. I moved forward just enough to catch the falling gun. I didn't aim at Elena. I couldn't blow her away. I wasn't sure she was the real bad guy here. So instead, I flung myself off the ground toward Elena. I hit her low, right below the knees, forcing her to the ground again. I slid up her body using my extra mass to keep her under control. Curling my fingers into a fist, I prepared to clobber her. We locked eyes. I hesitated. Not because she had beautiful emerald green eyes that went on and on like a rolling field on a late spring day, which she did. It wasn't their beauty that stunned me, but their innocence.
Oh, that was such a mistake.
I didn't care. A pleasant, warming sensation swept over my body. I smiled. My fist relaxed. I let myself slide slowly off of her, relishing the contact I had with her, while at the same time being careful not to harm her. I couldn't have harmed her then if I wanted to. I rolled off, lying contentedly at her feet. I knew it wasn't right. but I didn't care. Rising to a knee, she leaned toward me and patted me on the head.
You could have hurt me, but you didn't. For that, I'm letting you live. Join the others and sleep while I finish my business here.
My eyes were so heavy. I didn't want to stay awake. I didn't want to be in her way.
Harv, it's up to you.
Was there ever any doubt?
The last thing I noticed was him shaking his head. When I woke up, I was in my seat again. The serving bots were rolling down the aisles with trays of food. I noticed that Elena was now sitting next to me. Carol was in Elena's seat, sound asleep. Everyone else on the shuttle was wide awake and blissfully unaware of what had transpired. I looked at Elena. She touched my hand lightly.
Your computer convinced me to talk to you.
You can thank me later.
Since she started talking to me in my head, I figured that it would be best if I did the same.
So why do you want to off Sputnik?
She stared at me blankly with those bright green eyes.
Why do you want him dead? Desmond said you hate him because he betrayed your motherland.
He may have, but I hate him because he betrayed my mother and father.
How so?
I believe he killed my father to get to my mother, to get to me.
Her thoughts sent a chill up my spine. Horror flashed across my eyes, the video report of Elena's dad being killed in a hover crash. The headline read, "Leading scientist dies in tragic hover accident."
The headlines say it was an
accident. I know what they say, but he did it.
To get to you.
He still hasn't given up hope on me yet. He wants to turn me to his side. He's even talked about adopting me. Being head administrator on the moon, it's within his right. He can do whatever he pleases.
What happened to your mother? She's dead, isn't she?
Now, why are you here, Zachary?
I don't trust Sputnik either. I'm trying to figure out if he had anything to do with the murders at the World Council building.
I wouldn't put it past him.
She stood up and touched me on the shoulder.
I will do both our worlds a favor by killing him.
I yanked her back down into her seat.
Oh, you are so lucky I haven't reduced you to a pile of dust yet.
Yeah, well, here's the poop. I'm not 100% sure he's guilty.
I am. I can feel it in my heart.
That doesn't hold up in a court of law.
It can if I will it to.
So you can do whatever you please?
Yes.
Then how does that make you better than him?
She sank back in her seat, her entire body almost blending in with the cushions.
It doesn't.
Just give me time to figure out what's going on. Once I have proof that Boris Sputnik is behind these attacks, I'll personally bring him down.
Well, I am sure he's behind my parents' deaths.
Are you really?
I have no actual proof. He controls everything on the moon, and Melda and Leia are almost as powerful as I am.
I'll look for proof of that, too. If he's diabolical enough to do one, he'd certainly be capable of the other. Something big is going down, and I need to find out what it is. But I need more time.
For the greater good?
Yeah, for the greater good.
Fine. I won't kill him. Yet.
That's all I ask.
The rest of the time passed fairly smoothly. Elena woke Carol up. After Elena explained her cause, Carol offered to give her a foot rub if she wanted. My guess was Carol was still feeling the effects of Elena's mental whammy. Elena told Carol she'd keep the idea in mind, but for now it probably wouldn't be such a hot idea to remove her boots, as she'd worked up a bit of a sweat tussling with me. Carol laughed it off, noting how her feet weren't always pleasant-smelling either. Elena insisted that was okay and encouraged Carol just to sit back in her seat and relax and enjoy the flight. Carol did so. Elena then admitted to me that she may have zapped Carol a bit too hard. For the rest of the flight, Elena gave me her version of life on the moon. She made it clear that she loved the moon. It was a wonderful home to the arts and sciences and a safe haven where science could practice openly. People on the moon weren't scared of science like Earth folks. In fact, they relished them. They thought of the science as their link to greatness. Elena went on and on about the wonderful, almost utopian atmosphere on the moon. To Elena, the only thing holding the moon back was Sputnik.
You know, Zach, I realize you like this girl, but surely you must realize she's still a prime suspect in the World Council killings. She has the power to pull it off. She might even try to set up Sputnik to kill two birds with one thought. Take out the people she sees as standing in the way of the moon's independence and get the guy you blame for killing your parents caught. The moon gets to go free and thrives.
Harv had a point, and I knew it. I had to consider Elena a person of interest. I was hoping she wasn't behind the murders at the World Council. For one, I liked her. For another, I didn't want to have to mess with her. The thing was, I knew she was perfectly willing to execute Boris, which meant she was capable of killing,
at least if she believed in our cause. I wasn't sure what the best course of action was, so I picked the most direct one. I looked at Elena into those big green eyes of hers.
Did you kill those World Council members?
Do you think I'm some sort of lunatic?
I prefer not to answer that on the grounds I'm afraid you'll wilt me.
I should wilt you, just for that accusation. Why would I kill council members I've never met, and therefore had nothing against?
They were gonna vote against the moon's independence. Maybe you thought you could tip the vote by knocking out three nays.
I was under the impression Sexy might vote correctly this time. Weathers had always been a friend of the moon in the past.
Yeah, times change. People change.
I felt the air around me get warmer. She placed a purple-painted fingernail in my face.
I would never kill anybody who didn't wrong me. You are very lucky I think of us as kindred spirits, or you'd be a smoldering pile of ashes right now.
She moved over and sat next to Carol. She propped her legs up.
I'll take that foot massage now.
Gladly.
Carol peeled off Elena's purple boots.
Make sure you aim my feet at your uncle.
Sure.
I slept through the rest of the flight.
We are making our approach to the moon now. Please return your seats to their upright positions and fasten your seat belts. We expect a smooth docking because there's no atmosphere to clash with, but our legal department insists we put that in.
Looking out the window, I saw the moon coming fully into view. From this distance, I was able to see both the domed colonized part and the native area. The former was lush and green. The latter was barren and brown. New and improved versus the way nature had intended. It was quite the contrast. Carol returned to her seat next to me. She looked a little dazed, but no worse for wear.
Nice to have you back. You are back, aren't you?
Yeah. Elena says you're going to need me now.
That's nice of her.
Zach, she's a good person. She's just torn by her bond to the moon, her quest for revenge, and the urge to do the right thing.
Aren't we all?
That's why I let her take control of me, so she would open up and trust me.
You let her turn you into her personal massage therapist?
That was my original intent. Truthfully, though, I'm not sure if that was really my original intent, or her intent to make me think it was my intent.
She put her finger to her lips.
She did help me learn a few tricks, though. She is quite the teacher. So, even if she did possibly take advantage of me, she paid me back.
It wasn't long before Carol, Elena, and I were on the elevator, the last three passengers to the shuttle. The door closed, and we started down.
So, Zachary, have you decided what to do about Boris?
I don't make rash moves.
Carol just stared at me. Harv appeared from my wrist comm, also staring at me.
Let's just say I'm trying to reduce the number of rash moves I make.
Carol and Harv both seemed satisfied with this.
Once I gather more info, then I'll decide.
I will give you a bit more time.
The door to the elevator opened to the moon's greeting and clearing area. There was a big, open dome within a dome. Sputnik had arrived a good half hour before us, but he was still in the area. Sputnik wasn't just basking in the attention, he was absorbing it. Elena cut through the crowd, making a beeline to Sputnik. I kept both eyes glued to her. I wasn't sure what she was up to, but I knew I wasn't going to like it. As she drew closer to Boris, I noticed that shining object appear in her left hand again.
Harv, zoom in on Elena.
A cursor appeared in front of my eye. The image of Elena enlarged. I plainly saw the glistening knife in her hand. I popped the Colt 2062 into my hand.
Gus, just take out the weapon.
You got it, big guy.
I pulled the trigger, aiming at the knife. My blast knocked the knife out of Elena's hands, sending it to the ground. Sputnik turned to see Elena coming toward him, holding her hand. It didn't take him long to figure out what was going down. Melda and Leia were first to react, moving toward Elena. About a dozen other security people and some gorillas in blue armored uniforms were also encircling her. That's when things got weird. Everything and everyone, except for Elena, started moving like they were in slow motion. The last thing I remembered before everything just stopped was Elena snaking her way through the crowd toward the exit. Next thing I knew, everything was back to normal speed, and Elena was gone.
My temporal senses are out of alignment by 10 seconds.
Elena can warp time with her mind! That is so sub-absolute zero.
It didn't take long for Sputnik to recover and regain his composure. He and his entourage headed toward us.
Are they mad at us?
No, they think you saved him, which you did.
The big question now was, why was I able to do it? If Elena had wanted Sputnik dead just then, she could have done the time warp thing, then killed him. Doss, why would she even bother to use a knife? Why didn't she just vaporize him with her brain? Sputnik wholeheartedly patted me on the back.
Thank you for saving me, Mr. Johnson. I finally realize what the lovely Miss Electra sees in you.
Melda and Leia moved forward, each taking one of my hands.
Yes, thank you for saving him.
Leia took a step back. She studied me.
He's wondering why she ran.
The thought did cross my mind. We were all at her mercy, but she booked. They all looked at me blankly.
Booked is Zack's simple way of saying ran.
She ran, or booked, as you say, because she can't hold time like that for more than a few seconds, and it leaves her drained. My wife and daughter, how do you say, would have done a number on her ass. Elaine always thinks of her own salvation first.
Leia took another step back. She tilted her head, still gazing into my eyes.
He's wondering why she used a knife.
True. Don't know why she just didn't melt you from across the room.
Two reasons. The first, that would have left her drained and she wouldn't have been able to escape so easily.
And the second?
Her sense of deranged honor. She feels like I killed her father, so she wants to kill me with her own hands. I'm afraid my niece has issues.
He's surprised Elena is your niece.
Yes, she's my twin brother's daughter. Elena and Leia were born on the same day.
He's wondering why we look so much alike.
My daughter resembles my niece so much because my twin sister is her aunt.
Twins? Married twins?
It's quite common.
He says...
I'll talk for myself.
Fine.
She claims her mother is also dead.
She's talking figuratively. My sister Shara is very much alive and well and running our Psi training center. When my sister didn't disown Bo immediately for what Elena believed was the killing of her father, Elena disowned Shara.
Elena is a bit of a loose cannon.
Then why do you let such a powerful Psi roam free?
This is not Earth. We don't fear Psis for simply being themselves.
They have their freedom, even if they're a threat to others?
My friend, she was a threat only to me. I was willing to take that chance in the hope that she would see the error in her ways.
Besides, until now we had no actual proof.
Now we do.
Yes, we do. We will bring her in and make sure she gets the help she needs and deserves. We know how to treat our own on the moon. Where are you staying?
Not sure.
We are staying at the dark side of the moon bed and breakfast.
Not anymore. You are now staying at the No Seasons Resorts, the finest temporary residence on the moon.
Thanks!
It is close to my home and office, so I could easily give you a tour. I'll have the gorillas take your luggage. I don't see any luggage.
I travel without it. My clothing's equipped with special nanotechnology, so it's constantly cleaning itself.
Yes, one of Dr. Poole's lab's more practical inventions.
This way, if needed, I can wear my same Sub-Zero PI outfit day after day and still be able to sneak up on the bad guys.
What about you, my dear?
I wanted to get the full moon experience, so I decided to shop for a whole new wardrobe here. My outfit has the same nano cleaners that Zox does, so I won't offend, but the girl needs a change.
Splendid. That works out perfectly, then. You check into your hotel rooms and relax for a tad. And then we will pick you up. Leia and I will show Zack around while Melda shows Carol around.
You sure you don't want to rest up a bit more after the long flight?
No. For some reason, we all slept a lot on this trip.
Sputnik called for a special limo to take us to the No Seasons Resort. He apologized that he couldn't include us in his cavalcade, but every seat in his limo convoy was taken by staff or family. He noted that it's not easy being the most important person on the Earth's biggest satellite. I gave Sputnik his due, as the limo he arranged pulled up to the curb by the shuttle port less than a minute after Carol and I left the building. The driver got out of the car. The first thing I noticed was that he was a gorilla. I'm not talking metaphorically. He, like the security team and baggage handlers, was an actual gorilla. He hopped over the car and opened up the back passenger doors. He tipped his bright yellow hat and bowed. Carol got in first. I followed. Thank you, my good monkey. The gorilla made some gestures with his hand. Sign language.
He says, I'm a gorilla, not a monkey.
The gorilla closed the door, then jumped back over the limo and into the driver's seat through the open window. Once he was in, he closed the window and drove off. How do I sign it was a joke?
He says he understands English as well as Chinese. He knows it was a joke, but it wasn't a very good one.
Yeah, maybe you have to be human to appreciate it.
He says he doubts it.
Trust me, Tio. The gorilla is right.
Do you have a name?
He says no. All gorillas on the moon just answer to, hey, you.
Okay, that may have been a dumb question. The gorilla made a fast hand movement.
He says, May.
I hope you're not expecting a big tip.
He says his name is Magilla.
Really? The gorilla just shook his head no.
He says his name is Maurice.
I looked at him with one eye. This time I didn't say a word.
He says he wishes he was kidding.
I don't blame him. As we drove, I took in the lunar sights that Maurice pointed out. The colony itself was an impressive place. It should be, for the money the major powers, then the World Council, spent on building it. It had the advantages of being new and having a controlled population. That meant lots of wide-open spaces lined with trees and flowers. What wasn't wide-open was occupied with nice new shiny buildings. According to Maurice and Harv, the moon's population was carefully regulated to stay between 1 million and 1.1 million people living in over 5,000 square kilometers of renovated planet. In comparison, New York crams over 13 million inhabitants into roughly 1,000 square kilometers. The moon also had the advantage of being in a totally pollution-free atmosphere. The dome encasing the inhabited area had a controlled environment that would always keep the temperature regulated between 20 and 40 degrees Celsius. The dome also regulated the lighting cycles, simulating an Earth day, giving a very consistent 16 hours of daylight and 8 hours of night, every day and night. All the energy sources on the moon were either hydrogen, fusion, or solar with no emissions. So the air may have been man-made, but it was cleaner and purer than anything on Earth. At least according to Maurice in the holographic brochure playing in the limo. I tried contacting Elektra, but Harv informed me that the conference was in a 24-hour blackout period so they could concentrate without outside distractions. Maurice told me the next day, when the blackout lifted, he would gladly drive me to the moon's conference center, noting that the attached living center is almost as spectacular as the No Seasons. He dropped Carol and me off at the hotel. It was a tall, spiraling building that reached almost to the top of the moon's protective dome. The plan was that Carol and I had an hour to relax and clean up before Sputnik and his crew arrived to give us the grand tour. Maurice mentioned that we might want to consider quick showers. He didn't want to offend us, but he did mention that gorillas and mooners have keen senses of smell. Carol and I walked into the hotel and checked in. We were greeted by a peppy hotel clerk. She was a tall, slim, light blue-haired girl, quite anxious to serve us. After the easy check-in process, we only had to give her our names and DNA prints. A couple of apes in bellhop suites accompanied us to our penthouse suite. They led us to an elevator and pressed the access code for the top floor. We hopped on. Within seconds, the door opened to the penthouse itself. Whoa. Sweet, sweet.
It's a 3-bedroom, 5-bath suite, the finest on the moon.
The ape wasn't kidding. The general living area the elevator opened up to was both spacious and elegant. The place was lined with golden carpet, thicker than my lawn during the best of times. Crystal chandeliers hung from the ceiling. The part of the room nearest the elevator was the open rec area. It had a purple felt pool table, a foosball table, and an interactive virtual gaming center. Walking a bit brought you to the relaxation area dotted with light purple couches and overly stuffed chairs. Each of the chairs and the couch could recline, rotate, levitate, and had robo-massage. The room was fitted with the latest in VHDHV, meaning you could project the latest in holographic information and entertainment to any corner of the room. And of course there was the bar area, complete with stools and automated drink creator. The far wall of the room was a plexiglass picture window. According to the gorillas, the window led to the best view of the moon on the planet, which made it one of the best views in all of the known universe. That might have been a bit of an overstatement, but it was a pleasant sight nonetheless. Looking down on them from above, most of the structures on the moon seemed to be made from plastic blocks, but they were very shiny, colorful plastic blocks. Gazing past the city structure, I saw lush green fields of crops. At first, these seemed to be a stark contrast from the totally man and bot-made look of the city. But after pondering for a nano, I realized the fields were just as out of place on what was once a barren rock. I tapped the tempered glass.
This is unbreakable, right?
Both gorillas nodded yes.
Of course. The transparency of it is also voice-controlled for your privacy.
One of the gorillas signed something else.
He wants to know if you wish for them to prepare you a shower.
No, I'm a big boy. I can handle that myself.
More ape gestures.
He says it's tricky.
That's okay. I'm sure I can figure it out.
Harv leaned forward toward the apes and put a hand next to his mouth.
He has me to help him. He says if you need anything at all, just ring them.
I will, my good apes.
They each made more hand signals.
They both say they're actually great apes.
Sorry, no offense.
They gestured again.
They say only a little taken.
One of the apes held out a giant hand. I shook it. I noticed he had something in that hand. It was a credit recorder.
I think he wants a tip.
For what? It just walked us to an elevator and into the suite. A chimp could have done it. I felt eight eyes on me. Fine. I took the credit card and punched in a 10-credit tip. The apes looked at the tip, tipped their hats, and then headed out. The elevator door closed behind them. Why does everybody want me to take a shower?
Don't look at me. I have no olfactory receptors.
I don't smell bad at all.
Of course you don't. Nobody ever smells bad to themselves. You might have worked up a sweat on the flight here.
How could he work up a sweat? He slept most of the trip.
No, you and everybody else slept. I was fighting Elena.
It's true. She put you all to sleep and then almost put Zach to sleep for good.
That little bitch.
She wanted to kill Sputnik, but I wouldn't let her.
She took out an entire shuttle of size like we were nothing. Then she stops time with her mind at the port. How the DOS did you stop her?
He had me.
Yeah, I had Harv. Plus, I had some tricks up my sleeve.
That's me he's talking about.
Plus, I'm not as easy to kill as most people think.
Captain Ricky is right. You are kind of like a cockroach.
So that's how I might have worked up a little sweat. But I'm not offensive. At least I don't think I am.
Oh, fine. I don't get paid enough for this job.
Carol's knees buckled. Her eyes rolled to the back of her head, then closed. I caught her as she fell forward, limp as overcooked spaghetti. Ha ha, very funny, Carol.
Fascinating. Just as I suspected.
I held Carol up. She was totally dead weight. You suspected this?
Yes, I actually do have olfactory senses. I noticed that there has been some sort of weird interaction between your body under armor, sweat, pheromones, and the chemicals in the air here. I surmised it would act as sort of an opposite sex knockout gas.
So she's not faking?
Nah, she's out cold. It's really quite a fascinating phenomenon.
So what am I supposed to do?
I'm sure if you remove your body armor and take a nice shower, you'll be fine.
So I can't wear my under armor on the moon?
Well, you've always wanted to make women swoon.
How come the nano cleaners aren't working?
This is an interaction between your skin, the moon, and the nano cleaners. They are working, just not the way you want them to work. I can perhaps inject nano cleaners into your skin if you like.
I didn't even respond to that. I picked Carol up and carried her over to the couch. Ona 2 and 3 use their pheromones to manipulate people, not knock them out.
Yes, because they have control of their powers. You don't.
I gently laid Carol on the couch.
She's going to be all right.
Fine. I'll go with the showers and ditch the armor.
That's probably a wise plan.
I walked into the master bedroom. It was nice. I figured since Carol had passed out, I got to choose the best room. I got undressed and headed to the bathroom. The bathroom was almost as big as my house. I liked it. I stepped into the shower.
Greetings.
Greetings.
Please stand in the middle of the shower.
I did as I was told.
What temperature would you like?
Surprise me.
I have learned when people say, surprise me. They don't really want to be surprised.
Nice and warm.
Please give me your warm parameters.
Just give him 2 degrees above body temperature.
Very good. Would you like the complete surround shower experience?
Is there any other kind?
Well put.
My body was instantly cascaded with water from every conceivable angle, including 2 from underneath. It felt good, once I got used to the 2 bottom ones. I stood there basking in the shower in utter peace.
Don't forget to wash under your arms.
Okay, maybe not utter peace, but still relative peace. I lathered up, I washed down. I lathered up again. It felt good.
Uh-oh.
What?
The moon's computer systems have all just rebooted.
Which means?
Which means I can't access them. I'm blind except for what I see through your eyes and your communicator.
That means I'm blind to the outside world too.
True.
I'm an unarmed sitting duck in the shower.
Why aren't you packing?
My old gun and knife rust in water. I opened the shower door.
What about Gus?
Frankly, I'm not all that comfortable bathing with one sentient machine. Never mind, two. Reaching for a towel, a big hairy hand grabbed me. Before I was even able to react, I went flying across the room. I crashed back first into a bidet.